125 years ago this week. A ship sailing from Seattle bound for San Francisco never reached its destination. It was a freighter loaded with coal, but there were a few passengers aboard as well. So here with the story of the Ivanhoe and one of its notable passengers, our resident historian Felix Bunnell, brought to you by the King County Library System.
Yeah, I'm going to begin this story not at the beginning, but instead on December 18th, 1894. That was an otherwise unremarkable day on the windswept beach of the North Spit of what's now called Willapa Bay, but was still known by many back then as Shoalwater Bay. There was a lighthouse there in those years, a beacon that stood from 1858 to 1940. Anyhow, way back in December 1894, the lighthouse keeper's wife went for a walk, as she often did on that beach. That's when she noticed an unusual piece of driftwood sticking out of the sand. Now, it wasn't a log or a branch, it was a plank. And the part that was visible above the sand clearly had the letter E painted on it. Pulling it from the sand, it was clear that there were six more letters on the plank that spelled the name Ivanhoe. The lighthouse keeper's wife had found what's called a name board from the missing ship. Now, at that point, the Ivanhoe had been missing for more than 2 months, along with a crew of 20 and five passengers. This was a wooden sailing ship about 200 feet long, built in Belfast, Maine in the 1860s. It was owned by the Black Diamond Coal Company, and it had left Seattle right around September 30th, 1894, loaded with coal. Now, when it left, the ship was towed by the tug Taiyi out beyond the Strait of Juan de Fuca and past Cape Flattery, and it was in a bit of a convoy with a few other ships. By the next day, the Ivanhoe was still visible to at least one other vessel. This was called the Robert Sutton. But then a big storm blew in from the southeast with very little warning, as storms did in those days. And in the heavy rain and mist, the Robert Sutton lost sight of the Ivanhoe. But that was no big deal, no cause for alarm. The ships might have easily just gotten separated by the winds. But, as they say, nobody ever saw the Ivanhoe again, and no one was sure what had happened. So then a few weeks later, right after that storm, a life buoy, or what you might now call a life ring, from the Ivanhoe, was found on an island in Barkley Sound, way up on the west coast of Vancouver Island. So this convinced the investigators that the ship had broken apart and sank somewhere not too far off of Cape Flattery, somewhere south of where that life buoy was found, based on where the prevailing winds and currents would have pushed it, right? So it's, you know, right off Cape Flattery, it's made sense. The wind and the current would have pushed that life buoy right up to the north, the west coast of Vancouver Island. So when this name board turned up at Willapa Bay in December, 150 miles south of Barkley Sound, it was a bit of a mystery. And it led the Coast Guard to believe that the ship broke apart much farther south than originally thought, maybe off the mouth of the Columbia River. The winds and currents are such you couldn't have one item traveling way up north and one item traveling way down south 150 miles apart. Didn't make any sense. One theory could be the life buoy had been lost overboard before the ship got into trouble, but it's nobody knows the real answer. Either way, the Ivanhoe was almost 30 years old in 1894, which is old for a wooden sailing ship. It was heavily loaded with coal. Probably, I don't think OSHA stood by while they were loading that ship for the coal and said, okay, that's enough, boys. One of the historians from the Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society, my old friend Ron Burke, he said this was a recipe for disaster. There'd be very little margin of safety. If there was some kind of problem, you know, the hull separating, some kind of a leak, maybe even a broken hatch and that, you know, waves crashing over the top. He said if they got into trouble, they went down fast because they were so probably overloaded. Now, one bizarre wrinkle about this is that in addition to the crew, a passenger aboard the Ivanhoe was a 32-year-old guy originally from Ohio named Frederick James Grant. He was editor of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. 3 years earlier, he'd edited what amounts to the first book about Seattle history. He'd also been appointed by President Harrison to serve as a diplomat in Bolivia and had been in the Army. He'd also been in the state legislature for the first session in 1889. This guy got a lot done in his 32 years.
Yeah.
The book he edited, The History of Seattle, Washington, from 1891, is scarce and hard to find. Grant wrote the preface. I have a little excerpt read aloud by the great local historian, Paul Dorpat.
We who reside in Seattle today do not regard ourselves as in any sense pioneers. The substantial city of the present apparently has little in common with the frontier settlement of 25 years ago. But to the resident of Seattle, a century or two centuries hence, today will be linked with yesterday as the days of the pioneers. In the long perspective of the future, the present and the recent past will seem almost as one.
It's very great foresight. I could have Dorpat read the phone book, and I'd tune into that. Anyway, after he was lost at sea, Grant's friends raised money in his memory to buy books for the UW History Department as a memorial library. I don't know if that ever actually came together or if it still exists. I also tried to track down the name board and life buoy. Checked with all the maritime museums around here, had no luck. But then just yesterday, I found a note on a website that said that not long after the wreck, both of those artifacts were given to Washington Governor John Hart McGraw. So I checked with my friend Benjamin Helley at the State Archives, and he looked in their McGraw boxes, and they couldn't find either artifact. So those are still out there somewhere, which I'd love to track those down. No, part of what the story tells me is that the shipwreck lore around here used to be just really common currency. People would talk about shipwrecks all the time when the maritime industry was closer to everyone. We were more of a maritime community. It feels more abstract and distant now. And we've talked on this show before about the Valencia, about the beeswax ship. I don't want this to get lost, this notion of our deep connection to the sea here and the people who have been lost and the stories that are to be shared. I really want to keep talking about shipwrecks, so I hope I can keep doing this in the future.
Well, if you find anything suspicious on the beach, you know who to call. And we have a radio play coming up, don't we?
We do. It's right. Sorry, Wrong Number on October 29th. You have a great part. You're Waldo Evans. You have some of the best lines in the play. And
I really say
that to everybody. Yeah, you get some big sort of deep contemplative laughs.
I'm on the phone, though, right?
Everyone's on the phone. This is the perfect phone call, but from 1946.
Gotcha.